Have you been dreaming of deepening your beverage expertise? If you've resolved to get serious about learning more, then now is the time to take a course with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust, the same organization that was so pivotal in my own learning curve with wine and spirits. There are WSET certifications available at several levels for wine, spirits, and also sake, and WSET classes are taught in locations all around the world. Go to WSETglobal.com. That's WSETglobal.com to learn more about courses and to find an approved program provider in your area to take your beverage knowledge even further. When you study with WSET, you're also investing in your future with wine and spirits, whether that's for your own passion or for your career. And this is the perfect year to get started. Suppliers, distributors, and wholesale beverage buyers across the United States know that 750's powerful set of online tools helps them stand out in today's increasingly competitive marketplace. 750 brings together more than 60,000 on- and off-premise buyers, over 1,000 distributors, and a database with more than 800,000 products across 39 state markets. 750 is the only online platform that connects all three tiers of the trade. So whoever you are in wholesale, you can trust 750's up-to-date data to help you stay on top of the market. If you're not already part of the 750 community, now is the time to join the platform that has already accommodated over 15 million product searches from beverage professionals like you. Go to 750.com to create your free account today. That's 750 spelled out .com to set up your free account. I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today. The name Giulio Gambelli is frequently mentioned in the interview you're about to hear. Gambelli, who died in 2012 at the age of 86, was a longtime advisor to Gianfranco Soldera, to Sergio Manetti at Montevertini, with whom Gambelli created La Pergola Torte as a 100% Sangiovese, and to many other producers in both Montalcino and Chianti Classico. Gambelli had begun his career as a lab assistant to Tancredi Biondi Santi during the war years, and was known as a fantastic taster. The many stories about Gambelli and his amazing tasting ability seem almost unbelievable because they are so incredible. Several of the wines that Gambelli was associated with subsequently became very famous, but Gambelli himself was largely unknown. It was only towards the end of his life that writers began to devote pieces to Gambelli, such as in 2007 when Carlo Macchi published a book calling Gambelli "The Man Who Knows How to Listen to Wine." Another author who knew Gambelli and who wrote about his work was Bill Nesto, who co-wrote the book Chianti Classico, The Search for Tuscany's Noblest Wine. This is what Bill Nesto had to say about Gambelli when Nesto appeared for an interview in episode 402 of this program.
Giulio Gambelli had a profound influence, but it was overlooked because he was the opposite of fashion. Even his personality was different, totally different from a modern business person. I don't know, have you ever seen the movie Being There? It's a Peter Sellers movie where Peter Sellers plays this sort of person who, on one hand, he's so simple that some people think he's a prophet. On the other hand, they think he's a simpleton. Giulio Gambelli was like that. He was a man who was so humble that he was like a piece of stone in the ground. But at the same time, he had incredible knowledge and skill and was trained by Tancredi Biondi Santi, one of the archetype of what I think are the great Brunellos of the 20th century, Brunello di Montalcinos of Biondi Santi of the 1950s and 60s.
Something I like about the interview you're about to hear is that Enrico Pozzesi of Fattoria Rodano is both able to discuss Giulio Gambelli as a great winemaker and as a great friend.
Enrico Pozzesi on the show of Fattoria Rodano in Castellina and Chianti Classico. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. So your grandfather purchased Rodano in 1958.
1958, yes. He was the doctor of the village in Castellina and Chianti. And he had two very big passion, hunting and make wine. So that was the reason why he bought Rodano. After his death in 1968, my father, that was an engineer, owned Rodano, and he was involved in the Fattoria Rodano when he has only some free time. Also, he was involved for many, many years, like president of the consortium of Gallo Nero, Chianti Classico. So I am the first in the family that makes only this work. The time of my grandfather and my father, we didn't bottle, so it was only a passion, a second work. Many things changed, and so now we have 10 people working with us. We sell all the production, so I can also live there.
What was the condition of the property when you took over?
Oh, the condition was very good because my grandfather started to plant the vineyard when he bought Rodano, and I had the possibility to work also in that very old vineyards. When I arrived, we planted more, and now we have about 34 hectares of vineyards.
You're in Castellina, and Castellina is part of Chianti Classico, and what's it like there?
Castellina is the biggest village in the Chianti Classico. There are more vineyards than the other village in the Chianti Classico, and Rodano is only 300 meters on the sea level, and we have vineyards also 600 meters in Castellina, and the wine is very, very different. Also, the soil change a lot, and I can say that only in my farm, that is the same altitude and the soil is similar, I have three different kind of wine. So it's very difficult to speak about a village, especially in Chianti Classico, because the soil change, exposition is different. So that is the richness of Chianti Classico, is that there are very different kind of wine.
The soil changes in a uniform way or a little bit hard to discern?
Where I am, it's more easy because about half of the vineyards are on an alluvial soil. The other one is a soil, the origin is rocks. And it's very clear where is one and the other one. I have about half of the vineyards in one place and the other half in the other place. And after the aging, the wine is blended, generally. 80% is a blend of different vineyards. And I think the richness of the wine is because there are different characters of Sangiovese when grow up in one part or the other part. We do a single vineyard, Via Costa. It's 100% Sangiovese and only from that vineyard. And the character is very different from the blend that I do for the regular.
What are some of the differences in the palate that you notice right away?
First of all, a very strong relationship with the soil, with the place, because I started to realize Via Costa in 86, and after the aging, the wine are very similar in different vintage, the same character. You can recognize this is Via Costa. Also, to make a wine 100% Sangiovese helps a lot, because it's not a blend of grapes, it's only Sangiovese. So the character is always the same. At the beginning, we aged 40% of that wine in barrique and 60 in big bote. From the vintage of 04, we do only the big bote. I think that Sangiovese is better in big bote, but is my opinion. All the wine of Via Costa age in bote for about 3 years. For the blend of the regular, I age the wine 70-80% in bote and the rest in cement, and then I blend.
But you fermented in?
The Acosta is fermented in cement. The rest in steel. Because in steel, in the very hot vintage, is more easy to have a control of temperature, of course. In cement, it's less easy. So sometimes the result in some very hot vintage is better in steel than in cement. But usually we ferment the Acosta in cement. Also because I decide to release the Acosta all in the best vintage. So if the wine is not good, I don't release, no problem.
When a vintage is not good, is it usually too warm or usually too cold or rainy?
Maybe the two.
Okay.
But usually when we have very hot summer or dry summer, the quality is good. The quantity is very, very small, but the quality is good. When it's cold and the grapes don't need cold.
When you arrived, what helped you to start to form your views on how you should approach the wines and the vineyards?
When I started, I was lucky because there were some very old worker that lived in Rodano for all their life. So they taught me many things. And also when I started to work with Giulio Gambelli, was a big help, especially to make wine. In the vineyards is the experience, because every vineyard is different, every place is different, so you need experience. I did many mistakes.
What were some of the mistakes?
At the beginning, I didn't know anything, you know. In 10 years after starting to work there, we started to make organic agriculture, and it helps a lot. So we started to be organic, not for philosophy or for idea, only because I think that it is the better way.
And so some of the old farmers that you worked with, did they also feel that way about organics?
Of course, no. The tradition was different. And also when I planted the first vineyard on the clay, they said, you are crazy. But the result was very, very good. So it was a mix of what I studied, what I've seen in other places, not only in Chianti Classico, but I tried to go everywhere and to speak with other producers to understand something, only something. Because Giulio Gambelli one time said to me, what we understand about wine maybe is 20% of what happens. And at the beginning, I didn't understand what he was saying, but now maybe I understand something. He started to work in to help us in 81. I just started the year before. And Giulio Gambelli, for me and for my father, the first thing was a very good friend. And he said, I don't come to work for you. I come to help you. And it was also very difficult to pay him. Very, very difficult. And I was lucky because he was on the way to come back at home from Montalcino or from other place in Chianti Classico. And he came to take roses at my place for his wife every evening. So that was the reason that he stopped there, let me taste some wine, and he helped a lot me and my wine. And I can say that if I do the wine in this way, is because I met him.
So Gambelli, his specialty was more in the winemaking and the blending in the lab, or?
He loved the Sangiovese. And many times said to me that it was much better to make a Chianti Classico only with Sangiovese, but it was not allowed. I have to say that when we started with Via Costa, also when it was not allowed, we made the Classico with 100% Sangiovese. But I think that for the regular Chianti Classico, I don't know how much had the Colorino and Canaiolo. I think now not a lot, because Colorino was used for the color. But with the new clones and with this low production, we don't need more color. And maybe Canaiolo is more soft, but it's very difficult to find a very good original Canaiolo. The clones that you that you can buy are not so good. I have some in the Selezione Massale, and I continue to use, also because the tradition means something. So that was the tradition of Chianti Classico. Chianti Classico only Sangiovese is very modern, it's new.
But he was one of the guys who really created that, right? I mean, in a way, with Pergola Torte and other wines like that.
Yes.
So he was known for speaking in not with a lot of words.
In public, yes. In with us, he speak like everyone. You know? Also, everyone said that I don't speak a lot, you know, but with friends, when you speak with a glass of wine, I speak.
Were there particular lessons about tasting? Because he was known as a good taster, right?
Yes. He didn't need to make analysis to the wine. Because when he tasted, he has the capacity that the normal people don't have. I have seen to his office many famous enologists that go to him to ask something. But yet this capacity was incredible. One time, one producer in Chianti Classico, a big seller, I don't say the name, of course, that released the white wine and invited Giulio to taste this wine. And after they asked, what do you think about? He said, wine is good, but it's not all your wine. There are the 2% of Müller Thurgau that you bought at that vineyard in Trentino. Maybe he tasted that wine and in his mind there is something special. So you can classify everything that he tasted.
I mean, that's incredible.
It's incredible. And there are many, many, many other stories about it. But
it's also unusual for someone of that age to taste that well. Because usually people, their tasting acuity loses with time. Because when you worked with him, he's in his 70s, right?
Yes.
But he was still super sharp, huh?
Yes. Also, I had the luck to go to his office to taste wine with him. So sometime I've seen that he take a bottle and say, Enrico, taste this wine. And I say, this wine is oxidate. Yes, I know. It's there from 2 years. But you don't understand. Okay. For me, I tasted only the oxidation, nothing else. But he tasted also other things. So
it's interesting because when I taste wines that he was really associated with, like Pergola Torte or Soldera or your wine, there's a certain Gambelli taste for me. And it is somewhat, I think, I'm guessing, in the use of oxygen. Because it's a not primary grape taste. It's a little bit something brown, something expressive in youth, nuanced, and textural. That I don't know what causes that. But it's something that I associate with wines that he makes. There's clear yes. Red fruit, but
maybe that is the connection from the different wine that he released. Because every wine that he released is very different and speaks about the place. But it's true. There is this same character. The wine are not so fruity. Maybe it's the same line. I don't know. I think that we do the wine in the same way. Because everywhere is it did in the same way.
When I try to think about that and what would cause that to happen, I don't really know the answer, except maybe how the wines are topped up or not topped up in the barrel, or what kind of barrel, or maybe lees, but I don't know. So this is the first time I've asked this question to anybody. So I ask you.
I'm honest. I never think about that. But thinking now, I can say that maybe one reason is that we never had any selected yeast. Maybe that one is one reason. And the long time of maceration is also another reason, because I'm sure that after 40 days of maceration on skin, the fruit is very low. Also, usually we use the big boat and not barrique. Yes, also I tried, but we prefer to come back to the big boat. One other reason maybe is that after the aging in wood, the wine come back in cement for 6 months. Maybe that one is another reason. But what you say, I agree.
What about racking? How often does the wine move from one vessel to another before it's bottled?
Depends from the vintage.
What would affect that?
We don't put the wine very soon in wood. Because Gambelli said that until the wine and the manolatic, until the wine is not clear, it's better don't do it. I know that is the maybe he's the only one that said that. And so we put the wine in wood after 6 months from the harvest in April, May, not before, not some days after the end of the fermentation.
So does that mean that the mallow does not happen in wood?
I prefer not. And maybe this is also another reason what we say before.
So how long does a typical mallow take for you?
It is changing a lot in the last years. In the last 2 years, 3 years, I had many problems. Also because I don't do nothing to help manolatic. I don't use any battere. And so it's long, and sometimes also after 3-4 months from the end of the alcoholic fermentation. In the hot vintage, we have manolatic during the alcoholic fermentation, also because we don't do any control, temperature control or control of manolatic. So maybe that is a reason. But I've seen that in the hot vintage, manolatic is during the alcoholic fermentation. Someone says that is very dangerous. I don't know.
Did he ever do any work with Governo Toscana, where the grapes are slightly dried?
No, because it's a crazy thing. You take many risk with a wine that is finished. You take another risk doing the Governo. And why? Because maybe 20 years ago, Governo helped to make the wine ready before. Now we don't need. We make wine for aging, so Governo make no sense. In Chianti Classico, maybe if I have to do a young wine, maybe it's possible, but there are other things that are less risk than Governo Toscana.
So would Gambelli come over for dinner or share a meal or have lunch, that kind of thing? You talk about wines?
No, only when I was married, they came to my... because he was a very reservato man.
He was a very reserved man.
Yes, in the private life. But we have many occasions to speak about wine. When I went to his office, and I don't know if I went there every day or when I have some time, I went. So we had many, many, many times to speak about wine and taste wine.
Was he a fast taster or a slow taster?
Very slow, very slow. When we did the blend of the different botti, maybe for the regular, we blend about 30, 40 different botti, and we need 2 mornings to full, so 6-8 hours. Also, the enologist that now works with me, I was with him at his office, and he works in the same way. So we take a lot of attention when we make the blend. And what I learned that 2% of a different kind of boat can change the rest, 98%. It's unbelievable, but it's true.
Where do you think he was coming from with that? Was that Tancredi Biante Santi teaching him, or did he learn that from around the world?
Did he visit wineries around the world, or what was the background that he came to that point?
I know that he was sometimes in Burgundy, in Cordon, in other places, but I don't think that every year that he went somewhere. So I know that at the beginning he worked with Biondi Santi in Poggibonsi, and in that cellar they buy a lot of wine from everywhere in Tuscany, so he had the possibility to taste many things. I think that Giulio had particular capacity that is not normal. But he always said that you have to taste a lot to the level of the taste. So I don't know how many wines he tasted in one day, but a lot. Because I was in this office in 1-2 hours, we tasted 10-20 different wines from different places. So.
Did he talk to you about soil types? Did he say, off this kind of thing, I get this, or exposures?
In all my time with Giulio, we have been together in the vineyard maybe not more than 10 times. He came to the cellar to taste the wine during the fermentation. But I don't know why, but he was not so interested in the vineyards. But I can say that after some years, he can recognize all my wine and he says, this wine comes from that vineyard. I don't know why, but maybe he never seen that vineyard. He had seen, but he didn't come every year to see the grapes or in the vineyards. And one other thing, when he tasted the wine only one time during the fermentation, maybe after some years, after aging, he said, this wine comes from that tank after 2 years. And I went home to see if it's true, and always was true. It was incredible. I don't know what was in his mind and his palate. There was a very close connection.
And it was difficult to pay him?
Yes, because every time that we want to pay him, he said, no, we are friends, I don't want anything. He was a very good friend of my father. And my father gave me the money and sent me to his wife and don't say to Giulio, and we paid. I don't know if it was the same with the other, but I listened this thing also from many others.
What do you think he and your father developed a friendship over?
My father was president of the consortium for many, many years, and Giulio was one of the consultants most known there. And also he went to the consortium 2 times every week for the tasting to give the okay for the bottling. So they met many times at the consortium and also at home.
Did he ever give you advice that you didn't take?
Never. No. No, because from the beginning we had a very good feeling and I didn't know anything at the time. He was a very good teacher and also a very good friend. And he said, do this, but no, in the right way. In the right way, not do this. So, happened also some mistake, like to plant Merlot. He said, plant Merlot, we did it, and it was a mistake. But not for Chianti Classico, because we have some IGT vineyard. Also to try something different, but also we want to experiment different things. We started with Barrique, he agreed at the beginning, and then after many 10 years, we decided to don't use because the result was not so good, but at the beginning, no problem, we can experiment. His mind was not closed, it was very open.
That's interesting. That's not what I would have assumed.
That is my experience with him. There are not a lot of things because he didn't like the technology. So the only machine that we have is some pump. He disagreed with the use of selected ester. No.
I think the whole time that you knew him, he was locally famous. But you may have seen a change in terms of international fame, mm-hmm. more closer to the time he died. Because I feel like people didn't really talk about him during a period of time where other consultants got more attention.
Yes, it's true. He was very modest. And sometimes you hear that this wine is from that enologist. When the people speak about Rodano, Montefertino, or other, the wine it comes from Montefertino, or from Rodano, or from Soldera. And then there is Gambelli. For other enologists, it's different. And I don't know if you want to record this in the interview. There were some enologists that they had problems with the law because some enologists said he was not an enologist. He don't have any paper. So, and that time was not so good for him because they were all friends. Okay. So he had some problem to say. Also, he said, when you write something about Rodano, don't say that I am your enologist. You have to say I am your consultant, you know.
I see. So he wasn't officially an enologist. And
yes.
The other people objected to
yes.
that characterization.
Yes.
And so
yes.
he didn't want his name necessarily associated with the wines
yes.
or the wineries because he wasn't an enologist. And there were people giving him trouble.
So that was the one reason that was difficult to pay him.
I see. For a few reasons. There was a little bit more distance between his name and the winery names.
Yes.
Unlike the other enologists.
Yes. And also I can say that for the journalist, before he died, was not so famous, you know. After, yes, because we lose a teacher. He's much more popular after he died than before. For me, it's the same. Was a very good experience, a very good friend, first of all.
So what about the vintages? What are vintages that have really surprised you? What are vintages that have been challenging? What are vintages
yes.
where it's really come together?
The last very complicated was 14. We had rain all the summer and also was very cold. Rain and cold is not good for maturation of grapes. Others, one very bad was 2002. But there are also some vintage that we were surprised about the result. 04, for example, that was a very generous vintage, also in quantity. And so the wine at the beginning seemed light. But was a wine that aged very well and is still very, very, very good. Also 95 surprised me for the same reason. 95 is still very, very alive, very young. For me, it was very difficult also 2000 because it was too dry and I did some mistake in the cellar, so we didn't bottle anything. But I think the reputation of 2000 is not bad, it's not a bad year. So you can have a surprise in the good way and also in the bad way. 2001 was the same. At the beginning, it seems not a great vintage, and it was a great vintage. So because maybe with Sangiovese, you have to wait the 2 years of aging to understand very well the potential of that wine. The last years, we speak very well about the 15. Everyone say that is one of the best vintage of the century. Maybe the reason is because it was after 14.
Everyone's just happy, huh?
I think that 16 maybe is more balanced than 15. I prefer 16 than 15. Sometimes we speak a lot about a vintage and then we have bad surprise. On the contrary, sometimes we don't speak and we have a very nice surprise. I think that for the best expression of Sangiovese, you have to wait minimum 2 years, 2 years and a half. It's very important to take the time that the wine needs. There are vintages that are ready before, but there are someone that you need more time.
What's the outside curve for how long the Chianti Classico can age? What's the oldest that you've had that's been really good?
In Rodano, we started to bottle in a serious way only with the vintage 86. I have some bottle of 86 and some bottle of 88 Via Costa are still very, very good. And I tasted very old vintage from other producer based on Sangiovese. And I think that with the new idea to have low production for Hector, we can have very good, very fine and alive bottle of 40, 50 years. Also because Sangiovese is good from when he's young and when he's old, and he's very different.
You planted Merlot and Cab, and you experimented with smaller wood, but why do you think that you weren't more drawn to the kind of super Tuscan, big dark fruit wines that were very popular when you were a young guy who didn't know a lot?
That was very popular. Also, we had the Super Tuscan, a blend of Sangiovese and Cab, like everyone. I can say that except the 3-4 big names, now there is no interest in this kind of wine. There is much more interest for the denomination, and I'm happy about that. But maybe that if we didn't add this Super Tuscan, because there are some that are 100% Sangiovese, maybe that kind of wine helped us to understand that you can do great thing with the Sangiovese. I started also to make a Cabernet Sauvignon 100%, because I think that Cabernet Sauvignon grow up very well in an Chianti Classico. Sometimes I say that after the Sangiovese is the variety that I prefer, but after Sangiovese. So I think that we have much work to increase the quality of Sangiovese, not in the cellar, but in the vineyard, because we don't have the same story of Burgundy, of Barolo. We didn't study anything about the soil. And I think that the new idea to make the Zonazione is a beginning to start this work that we never did. So that is one of the reasons that I say that Sangiovese in Chianti Classico has great potential. When we did the Chianti Classico 2000, we studied many things, but not the soil. So we have to start now. So I know that is difficult because I explained you that in Chianti Classico, the soil change 100 meters, another 100 meters. So it's also difficult to make this, but we need to do it.
Enrico Pozzesi has learned a lot, but is looking forward to the future and progress in Chianti Classico, in Castellina, at Fattoria Rodano. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you to everyone. Thank you.
Enrico Pozzesi of Fattoria Rodano in Chianti Classico, in Castellina. New York State is home to an ever-increasing amount of high-quality wineries, and keeping track of the growth has become more fun every year. On March 20th, there'll be a perfect opportunity to see what New York wineries are up to now, as over 40 winemakers from the Finger Lakes, Hudson River, and Long Island will join together for New York Drinks New York, the grand tasting of New York wines at the Altman Building in Manhattan. Go to nydrinksny.com for more information about the trade and media tasting from noon to 4 on March 20th, or the public tasting that same day from 6 p.m. to 8. There's early bird pricing available for the public, and this event does fill up for the trade. So go now to nydrinksny.com to get your tickets or to register as trade. The New York Drinks New York tasting in Manhattan is the best opportunity to try for yourself the high quality that New York State offers today. Go to nydrinksny.com for more information.
I think that for a producer it is difficult to explain his wines. When I started in 1980 with about 18 hectares, we did the same quantity of wine that we do with the 34. Of course, the quality was different. And so everything has changed in the last 20 years.
This episode was made possible by Vinitaly, the world's largest wine fair, held each year in Verona, Italy.